Hey, so if you're new here, I'm the associate pastor here. I'm Mark. Our senior pastor, Rod, he is preaching in another church this morning. But I'm going to be continuing in his series from the book of Revelation, Seven Lessons from Seven Churches. And what we're doing is we are going through the seven churches that Jesus spoke to at the very beginning of chapters 2 and 3 of the book of Revelation. Now, I had gotten into this conversation with my small group last week, and some of my small group was saying that Revelation can be a really tough book to follow, to go through, to study. And my wife was saying that, you know, sometimes she just kind of checks out because she kind of gets bored with it or whatever. She doesn't really understand it. All the imagery, all the weird creatures flying around and all the different things going on. It's kind of a hard book to study. How many of you have ever felt that the book of Revelation is kind of one of those books that you kind of avoid because it's hard to study? Yeah, a couple of you guys, right? This is one of the things I want you to know about the book of Revelation as we're going through it. Yes, it can be intimidating. Yes, it's apocryphal. Yes, there's images and imagery that is kind of mind-blowing for some of us and for all of us, really, to be honest. But the book of Revelation is not necessarily about the end times. There's end times in there. Obviously, it's prophetic. But it's really a book about Jesus Christ. It's a revelation of who Jesus Christ is. It's a revelation of his glory. It's a revelation of his power. It's a revelation of his care and his love for the church. And the book of Revelation is not meant to be scary. It's meant to be encouraging to his people. It's meant to say, look, here's what's going to happen. I don't want you guys to be shocked. I don't want you guys to be discouraged by when you start seeing things kind of going downhill and the Antichrist rising to power. I don't want you guys to be discouraged in that, because look at the end. I'm coming back. I'm going to bring my battalion with me. I'm going to bring my army, my horses. All my people are going to be following me, and we're going to conquer sin and death forever. It's going to be done. Satan's going to be cast into a fiery pit. All that's going to be over. This book is really meant to be encouraging. It's not meant to be scary at all. Now, as we go through the churches, some of them do receive rebuke from Jesus Christ. Some of them are doing some things wrong, and Jesus says, hey, fix that. Smyrna is one of only two churches that does not receive a rebuke. They don't receive a rebuke from Jesus. It's not that they're not doing anything wrong. I'm sure they were. But what Jesus points out to them in this letter that we're about to read is their faithfulness and how much it pleases them. Pleases him, I mean. And they're being faithful to him. He's remaining faithful to them always. And he has no rebuke for them simply because of their faithfulness. And like I said, I'm sure that there were some things that Jesus could have pointed out. There's no church that is perfect. There's no person that is perfect. I mean, you see our sign out there, right? No perfect people allowed. I think, you know, we do that well here. but let's go ahead and turn to Revelation chapter 2, verse 8. And we're going to be reading from verse 8 to verse 11. Revelation chapter 2, verses 8 through 11. Now, I've titled this message, Faithful to the Faithful Squared. And you'll see why. I'm kind of a geek that way. But faithful to the faithful, squared. Here we go. And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who conquers will not be hurt by the second death. No rebuke. Now, we read Ephesus last week, and they had a rebuke. They had lost their first love. We'll read, I believe it's Pergamum, and they are compromising their faith, their belief. They're compromising their doctrine for the sake of those people around them. Then, of course, we read Laodicea, and they're the church that Jesus spits out of their mouth because they are lukewarm. There's rebukes everywhere to the seven churches, except for Smyrna and Philadelphia. The only two churches that do not receive a rebuke. And in your going deeper notes that you'll see that I put together, I'm going to have you guys compare the two letters, and you'll see that Jesus loves it when his people are faithful. There's nothing that pleases his heart more than when his people are faithful to him, despite what's going on around them, and in spite of all the persecution, the trials, the struggles that are happening in their lives. If they remain faithful to them, even though there might be other stuff that they're off on, he looks at that faithfulness and goes, man, that's what I love. And because of your faithfulness, I don't have a rebuke for you. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Smyrna. Smyrna was, like Ephesus, was an extremely important city. Right now, it is called Izmir. It's modern-day Izmir. There's about 200,000 people that live there in Izmir, and it's still a very important city in Turkey. But one of the things there is that it is one of the only cities left in Turkey that has a significant Christian population. In fact, much of Turkey refers to Izmir as infidel Izmir. Now, they're still the minority. There's still many Muslims around them. The majority of the city is Muslim. But they have a significant Christian population. They were a very large seaport. They're still a very large seaport. So commercially, they were extremely important to Rome. They were a place where a lot of commerce would take place. There was trade routes that went through there. So in other words, they were a very, very wealthy city. But the Christians in Smyrna, they were poor. Now, there were a lot of important facilities in Smyrna. There was the temple to the mother goddess Sibyl. She was the one who created life and death. According to that religion, there was a shrine to Homer. There was a huge library there, large Jewish population as well. But one of the most important things that really impacted the Christian population in Smyrna in this day was that the worship of Caesar was extremely important in that city. If you didn't say, Caesar is Lord, if you didn't sacrifice and burn incense to Caesar at least once a year, saying that Caesar is Lord, then they would take away your freedoms. They would take away your rights. Some people would be put to death simply by not worshiping Caesar as Lord. And this is why the Christians of Smyrna were poor. Because what took place is as they refused to worship Caesar, as they refused to recognize him as a Lord, as they continued their faithfulness in Jesus Christ, they lost their businesses. They were kicked out of their guilds. They were kicked out of their unions. They were people who did business with them were persecuted themselves. So basically, they lost their entire livelihood. They had no means of income. People who were blacksmiths could no longer practice blacksmithing because they refused to worship Caesar. People who were doctors, lawyers, you name it, whatever they were in that city, if they refused to burn incense once a year to Caesar and say, Caesar is Lord, they refused, they lost the right to do business. Think about how hard that would be. I mean, I just moved to a different city, right? But they were kicked out of their guilds. And this is why the people of Smyrna were poor. But this is also why Jesus says, you're so faithful to me. In spite of the trials, in spite of the struggles, in spite of these tribulations and these things that are going on and your persecution that's coming from the government and coming from the Jews and coming from all these different religions and the people of Smyrna themselves, despite all that, you're faithful to me. And I love that about you. Look at how Jesus addresses them. One of the first things Jesus does is he gives them a word of encouragement. He knows their struggles. This is what I love about Jesus. And this is what I really want to do today with this study is, since the book of Revelation is a revelation of Jesus Christ, let's look at Jesus. Let's look at how he treats his people, how he ministers to his people. And the first thing you'll see here is that he gives them a word of encouragement. He says, "And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and last, who died and came to life. I know your tribulation, I know your poverty, yet you are rich, and the slander of those who say they are Jews." What he's saying here is, I'm beyond all that. I'm the first, I'm the last, I'm the one who has conquered death. I am superior to all that is going on around you. And here's something interesting that I found in my studies. By Jesus saying that he is the first and the last, the one who died and was and rose again, and I love this about the Bible. Some of these things you got to catch, they're very subtle. He is taking a hit, a slam, against the worship of Sybil, the mother goddess. Because the mother goddess is the one who created life and death. The mother goddess is the one who is worshipped for that. She's worshipped for creating life and death. Jesus says, you know what? I'm the first, I'm the last, I'm the one who died and rose again. And by saying that, he's saying, I am superior to Sybil. I am superior to that mother goddess that everybody's worshiping, that is actually a false god, that actually demons are behind that god. There's nothing there. They got nothing on me. I conquered that. It's over. So he's telling his people, and they understand the context because they're right in the middle of other people worshiping this mother goddess figure. They understand exactly what Jesus is saying. He's saying, I'm better than that. I'm superior to that. I want you to know this. And it's a very subtle slam. And Jesus is kind of a smarty pants here. And you got to love that. But he does the same thing even in Ephesus. I found this out a few years ago. In Ephesus, it talks about how Jesus is the one who holds the stars in his hands, right? And he walks among the seven lampstands. You guys kind of remember that part in Ephesus? Rod talked about it last week. Okay, in Ephesus, this is awesome, guys. Emperor Domitian, had this coin minted, and it had him sitting on a throne amongst seven stars. There were seven stars that were around the Emperor Domitian as he's sitting on this throne. This was the coin that he had minted. Well, Jesus says, at the very beginning the letter to Ephesus, he says, I'm the one who holds the stars in my hand. So this guy thinks he's all high and mighty. He has a coin minted about him. He has himself pictured among seven stars. You know what? He's got nothing. I hold those stars in my hand. And Jesus does this from time to time, and it's very subtle, but he's a smarty pants, dude, I'm telling you. He's saying, you guys think you got it, but I am above that. I am superior to that. I am better than what is going on earth because I am in heaven. I am enthroned amongst the universe. I am creator over everything. You guys have nothing to worry about. I know it's hard. I see the trials, I see the tribulations, I see the struggles. This is another thing that we need to get. Jesus sees everything that we're going through. He's not blind to it. He gives them his word of encouragement. I see your struggles. I see your trials. I see your I see how those other people are treating you. You're poor, but you're really rich. Because of your faithfulness, you have access to my throne. You have access to all the riches of heaven. Because of your faithfulness, I am with you. Because of your faithfulness, I commend you. Because of your faithfulness, I do not rebuke you. Because of your faithfulness, I am proud of you. This is the word of encouragement that Jesus gives this church that has lost their jobs, that is being persecuted by everyone around them. Jesus tells them, I see that, but I also see your faithfulness. There was this bakery in Portland a few years ago. I remember it because I think I was living in the Portland area at the time. A lesbian couple comes into this bakery, and they asked them to bake a cake for their wedding. And this bakery, the couple that owned the bakery, they were Christians. They were believers. And, you know, right to refuse service, right? Isn't that a thing? It used to be. I remember I always had to put on a shirt whenever I walked into a building, right? You guys don't want to picture that, trust me. But I remember they had this right to refuse service thing. And so they said, I'm sorry that it violates our beliefs. We're not going to bake the cake for you. But there's other businesses that I'm sure will do fine for you. So this lesbian couple, and they file a complaint with the state government, and people start picketing this business, this Christian couple's business, who it was a flourishing business at one time, and they start picketing, and people who would go in to do business with the bakery, the people who were picketing outside would yell at them and scream at them and keep them from going into the business. And eventually, they had to actually shut down their retail location. They had to shut it down because they were using their own right to refuse service to anyone based upon their personal beliefs. But they were persecuted for that. Now, I don't know exactly what happened, but I heard that there was a fine of like $120,000 or something that could have been handed down to them. But I know they lost their livelihood. They lost their livelihood because they stuck up for their faith. And these things happen all over the United States. This happened in Colorado. It's happened in Washington. I believe it's happened in Arizona, New Mexico. And Christians, even in modern day, are sometimes persecuted for our beliefs. It's exactly what was happening in Smyrna. Because they were sticking up and saying, Caesar's not a god. Caesar's not Lord. Caesar is just a man. How many of you guys have felt that struggle in your own personal life? Maybe you haven't lost your business. Maybe you haven't, you know, been spat upon or cursed at, but there's always, when people find out you're a Christian, there might be those people that kind of, I don't know, not necessarily persecute you, but they kind of don't want to be around you anymore. They kind of want to, okay, that's the Christian guy, that's the Christian gal, they're fanatics, so don't go around them. And they treat you differently. How many of you guys have had that experience? Try being a pastor. I remember there's been so many times where I've just been talking to somebody. And, you know, that's a topic of conversation that comes up all the time when you meet somebody for the first time. What do you do for a living? Well, I'm a pastor. And then all of a sudden they start, oh, have I been cussing? I remember this one dude came over. I tried fixing my water heater. I am horrible at this kind of stuff. But you know those copper pipes, right, that hook up to your water heater? I like had it bent at like a 90-degree angle. I was just trying to replace my water heater. So this thing was, I mean, if I would have turned it on, it would have sprouted a leak. It was horrible. It was this mess, right? So I finally end up, I call this guy, this plumber, to come over, and he does a great job. He fixes it up. He hooks me up so I don't ever have to worry about those stupid copper pipes anymore, because I can't sweat a pipe. I don't know how to do that. So he comes over, and we're just talking, and he's like, effing this, effing that, dude. And I'm just talking to him, you know, and yeah, I don't like the F word, but, you know, I'm not going to judge him for using the F word. He isn't, that's one of his favorite words, so whatever. But we're talking, and he's like, hey, man, so what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a pastor. And he's like, oh, crap. And like, I mean, he was sitting there, he was taking his time doing the work the whole time, and all of a sudden he's like, okay, I'm done, see ya. I'm like, all right. But that's how it is. All the people in my neighborhood, they all know I'm a pastor. And it's fine. I love that, because some of the people I've been able to minister to, some of them come to our house because they're under duress and, you know, they have some things going on in their life and they need somebody to talk to, so they know that I'm a pastor. And it's cool. You know, those kind of things are cool. But I also know that the same couple, you know, before they were in having struggles, he was very careful with his language around me, and he always kind of had a little bit of a wall up, but Great couple, though. Believe me, I love this couple to death. And they're actually one of my favorite neighbors. But that's kind of the way it is. You know, and even as Christians, you know, you don't have to be a pastor to have the limelight shown upon you. People know you're a pastor. Or not a pastor, a Christian. And they're going to watch you. They're going to watch your language. They're going to watch how you react to certain situations. And if you react in a way that they think, oh, that's not very nice of a Christian to do, they'll let you know. That's what I call light persecution. That's kind of like, you know, Budweiser, Bud Light. You know, Bud Light is less fuller than Budweiser. You know, it still does the same stuff, but, you know, it's less. That's the way I kind of think of that. It's persecution light. You know, we're not being stoned. I know, I brought up a beer reference. I know. But you guys are all tracking, so. Yeah, no perfect people allowed, right? But we still feel it. It still hurts. But here's the word of encouragement that we receive from Jesus that he gives to Smyrna. In spite of all that, in spite of some of my neighbors talking bad about me because they know I'm a pastor and they hear me hit my thumb with a hammer and say the D word, you know, in spite of that, and they hold that against me, you know, I just smashed my thumb, dude. In spite of that, when I remain faithful and I own up to my shortcomings, I say, yeah, I screwed up. Yeah, I do that from time to time. I screw up. If I remain faithful, those little screw-ups that I have, this is what I'm learning from Smyrna, those little screw-ups that I might have, Jesus says, that's okay. I don't hold that against you. I'm not going to rebuke you for that. Yeah, you have some things to work on for sure, definitely. But because of your faithfulness, because of your faithfulness, because you are faithful to me, in spite of persecution, in spite of all the things going on around you, in spite of those neighbors talking behind your back, in spite of your coworkers, well, not my coworkers, but some of your coworkers, in spite of your coworkers always keeping an eye on you and making sure you know when you mess up just because you're a Christian and you claim the name of Jesus Christ, in spite of that, because of your faithfulness, I don't even worry about that stuff. Is that encouragement or what? This is the lesson we're getting from Smyrna. When we remain faithful to him, it pleases him to the point where he's like, I don't see that other stuff. I'm not going to rebuke you for that. Doesn't give us an excuse, though. I want you to know that. Does not give us an excuse. We still need to be working towards sanctification, becoming more and more like Jesus Christ. Doesn't give us an excuse. But when we remain faithful, he is even more faithful to us. But another thing that I get, and this is from another passage, is that in spite of our faithfulness, even when we are unfaithful, Jesus will remain faithful. And this is the lesson that we learn from the other churches that Jesus talks to. He's still faithful to them. Even Laodicea, even though he wants to spit them out of his mouth, he's giving them a warning because he doesn't want to have to spit them out of his mouth. He wants them to change. He still remains faithful. Let's look at these verses. I'm totally like way off my notes, so I got to find the verse. Oh my gosh, where is it? Okay, 2 Timothy 2:13. If we are faithless, he what? He remains faithful. This is where the faithful to the faithful squared comes in. Jesus is faithful to us in spite of our unfaithfulness to him. But when we are faithful to him, it pleases him even more. And he remains even more faithful and more faithful. And as he is faithful to us, we are faithful to him. And he is more faithful to us, and we are more faithful to him, and more faithful and faithful. You see how this compounds on itself. But I want you to get it. Our faithfulness does not depend upon his faithfulness because he is always faithful. He's always faithful. So when he's looking at Smyrna, he's like, I'm so faithful to you guys. I'm seeing you guys through this stuff. I see your struggles. I see everything that's going on. You've remained faithful to me. And that is so awesome. I am like so far off my notes, I don't know how to end this. Here's what I want you to get. And I was kind of trying to figure out how to work this in, and I think I have. Matt just had a great devotion on being a neighbor, what it means to be a neighbor. And he told that story, the parable that Jesus told, you know, of a man who was beaten up on the side of the road, and a Pharisee walks by, a Sadducee walks by, a priest walks by, and they all turn a blind eye to that guy who is on the side of the road beaten up because somebody wanted his money. And who comes along? A Samaritan, right? A Samaritan who is looked down upon by the Jews, who is a half-breed, who is someone who's not even worthy to be in the presence of the Lord, not even worthy to enter into the temple, not even worthy of anything except for rebuke and spite. And the Samaritan comes along, and he helps this man. And Jesus says, that's what a neighbor is. That's what a neighbor does. Now, that Samaritan could have walked right on by. That Samaritan could have walked right on by that Jewish man who was laying there alongside the road, because I'm sure that Jewish man would not have stopped for the Samaritan. That's how much division there was between the Samaritans and the Jews. But the Samaritan stops and says, in spite of the persecution that I've received from your people because they look down upon me, I'm going to help you out. That's being faithful to Jesus when we do those things. In spite of how other people treat us, when they need us, if we're there for them, that's faithfulness. If we don't hold anything against them, but we jump right in and say, you need my help, I'm going to help you. That's faithfulness to Jesus. That's bringing honor and glory to his name. Now, here's my challenge to you guys. Be faithful by being a good neighbor. Be faithful by being a good neighbor. Yeah, there are people that, like Matt said, that tick you off. You know, they don't take care of their yard, you know. They got the dog that barks. They're the ones that, you know, you want to throw the dog poop over the fence under their yard. I have a neighbor like that, sad. A few months ago, Kat and I went to this conference. Some of you may know this, some of you may not. We went to this conference, and it was called Neighboring. It was all about neighboring as a means of outreach. Being a good neighbor to your literal neighbors, like the people that are literally around you. Like, here's your house, and the eight houses that are around you, be a good neighbor to those people. And the idea was, Jesus said, hey, well, the two greatest commandments is love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength. Second is just like it, which I believe is absolutely related to it, is love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you don't love God, you're not going to love your neighbor. But how can you love God and not love your neighbor, those people who he has created in his own image? You see, there's a connection there. That's why Jesus says it is like the first one. To love your neighbor as yourself. And the idea behind this conference is, why don't we just simply start with our literal neighbors? And they brought up this, I wish I had the graphic with me, but they brought up this, I didn't know I was going this way. They brought up this graphic of a tic-tac-toe board. You guys know tic-tac-toe, right? X-O's, all that stuff. I always kill my kids in that game. I love it. And they said, your house is in the middle. Your house is the center square there. Now, all we want you to do, and this was what they did at the conference, all we want you to do is name the neighbors that are around you, your literal neighbors around you, and name have their names, their kids' names, what they do for an occupation, and just fill that in. You know how many people I knew? Three. I knew Chris on the side of me because he helped me move a heavy object into my house once. And he's a good guy. He's kind of, you know, he kind of keeps to himself. Then I have Howard and Sharon on my other side, and they're awesome. They're the ones that I totally love. I said they're my favorite neighbors. They are my total favorite neighbors. But, you know, I only know three of them. So I knew the one behind me because I don't like her at all. But I was convicted by that. I'm like, I'm a pastor, and everybody around me knows that I'm a pastor. All my neighbors, even the ones that I don't know their names, they know I'm a pastor. They all know that. And I don't know their names. I don't know what they do for a living. I don't know their kids' names. How am I being like Jesus at this time? How am I being a good neighbor? How am I loving my neighbor as myself when I can't even do it around my literal neighbors? I've been unfaithful in that. And what I want to challenge you today is to start there. If you want Jesus to be happy with you, be faithful in that. Be faithful in that. Doesn't matter what they think of you. Doesn't matter what they say about you. Doesn't matter if their dog comes and craps in your yard every morning, which I have one of those too. It doesn't matter. Be faithful to Jesus in what he has asked us to do in simply loving our neighbors as ourselves. That's what this looks like. And I believe this is what, it doesn't really say it here, but I believe this is what's going on in Smyrna. Is that in spite of persecution that they are receiving, they're still being faithful to Jesus in loving God and loving their neighbor as themselves. Because the church in Smyrna is still in existence today. It's small. It's small. But it's significant enough that the rest of the Muslim nation of Turkey around it looks at Smyrna and says, that's infidel Izmir, because that's the name of the city now, is Izmir. Isn't that interesting? In spite of the persecution, there's still a Christian population in that city because they've remained faithful. And I believe they've remained faithful, loving God, and loving others as themselves. And that's what I'm asking you. This is the takeaway for today. Love your neighbors as yourself. Be faithful in this aspect of your Christian walk. I threw out a challenge to some of the small group leaders, and it's concerning neighboring. And this was another little thing that I learned at this neighboring conference that I went to. I challenged some of the small groups, to just simply throw a neighborhood block party, a neighborhood barbecue. Take your grill out to the front of your lawn, take the grill out to the front of your street, start grilling up some burgers, start grilling up some dogs, and invite your neighbors. Invite those who are literally around you to participate. And it's just for fellowship. It's just to get to know your neighbors. It's just to get to know their names, get to know their kids' names, get to know what they do for a living. It's just a way to invest in their lives. And I told the small group leaders, you don't have to share the gospel unless, of course, the opportunity presents itself. You never shy away from that. But the goal is not to beat them over the head with Jesus. The goal is to just create a relationship with them so that as time permits, as time goes along, you will have those opportunities to introduce a little Jesus into their life because you've earned that right. You've shown them that you already love them. You've shown them by investing in their lives. You've shown them by giving them a stinking hot dog. You've shown them that you care about them. And when people know that you care about them, when people know that you love them, they'll listen to you. And that's the hardest thing about being a pastor is I already have that tag on me. I already have that tag. It's like, okay, if he's trying to be my friend, he's going to want me to go to his church. That's the tag that I have on me. And I can deal with that. It's going to be hard, but I'm going to deal with it. And this is going to be hard. This is going to be difficult for some of those small groups or even you. I challenge you. If you want to throw a block party just to get to know your neighbors, they're fun. It's fun to make friends. It really is. I'm an introvert. People scare me, but it's still fun to make friends. It really is. It's fun. There's something about it where you get to know somebody and you find that you have similarities. You find that you have like-minded thoughts, that you like the same football team, that you graduated from a school that was similar, that was close to their school, or find out that they're from Oregon and you're from Oregon. It's like, man, it doesn't matter where you're at. If you're an Oregonian and you meet another Oregonian, you can be in New York, you're like, yeah, brother, we're from Oregon. You know, I'm sure that's the way it is with other states too, but it's just the way it is. You find somebody from your own home state, you're like, all of a sudden there's a connection there. It's like, hey, I'm not alone. Be a neighbor. Be a good neighbor. Just throw a barbecue. Just get to know your people. Just when you're walking out to your mailbox, instead of just going, what's up? Say, hey, I'm Mark. Good to meet you. What's your name? What's your kids' names? What do you do for a living? What are your loves? You know, just get to know them. You know, you don't have to start an entire conversation with them, but just get to know their name. Then you can check that off your list. Hey, I know that person's name. And then as you begin seeing them more and more, you can say, hey, John, how you doing? And then that'll strike up more conversations. And then as those conversations roll on, they might find out that you're a Christian, and maybe they're someone who has walked away from the church, but God has been kind of placing on their heart, the Holy Spirit's been convicting them, and they're like, yeah, I kind of need to get back into church. And then that opens up the opportunity for you to say, hey, come to my church. So here's the thing with being a good neighbor, just simply being a good stinking neighbor to your neighbors, is that, and this was a saying that they said, sharing the gospel should not be an ulterior motive, meaning you're not building a relationship just to share the gospel with them. You're actually investing in them. You actually want to know them. You actually want to love them. You actually want to create a relationship with them. But it should be the ultimate motive. Does that make sense? Shouldn't be the ulterior motive, because people see right through that. But it should be the ultimate motive. Even if they never, ever commit their lives to Jesus, they should know that you love them. They should know that you're there for them. And when times get hard for them, when struggles come to them, no matter what they've said to you in the past, no matter what they've said about you behind your back, if you have shown them love by being a good neighbor, if you've been faithful to Jesus in this way, they'll come to you. They'll talk to you because you've already developed that relationship. You already know them. They already know you love them. They already know you're not going to condemn them for their lifestyle. Jesus told Smyrna, I see your faithfulness. I love it. I see your faithfulness to what I've called you to do, and I love it. In spite of everything going on around you, you're faithful to me. Therefore, I have no rebuke for you. We can be faithful by obeying that second commandment that Jesus gives us. Love your neighbor as yourself. We're going to sing this last song. It's Nearness. I forgot what it's called. It's called Nearness. If you are here this morning, you're struggling. You're one of those people that's struggling right now. You're going through a trial. You're going through a tribulation. You're feeling some of this persecution from the enemy. Some of these outside influencers are coming and they're hitting you and you don't know what to do. You're struggling right now. We've got people here that are willing to pray for you, because we live life together as a church. We're here to pray for you. We have people up here. They're willing to pray for you. If you don't feel comfortable coming up front and you know somebody that's sitting right beside you, ask them to pray for you. It's all right. We can pray in the aisles. We can pray in our seats. But we're here to live life together. If you've never accepted Jesus as your Savior, come talk to one of us. If you want to be baptized this morning, come talk to us. I think it's warm. Is it warm? It's warm. Okay. But as we sing this last song, please think about, how can I be more faithful to Jesus? How can I be more faithful to Jesus? If it's this neighboring thing, awesome. If it's something else, allow the Holy Spirit to convict you. Allow the Holy Spirit to speak to you. Let's sing.